Mr. Gamso.
Good morning. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal, if I might. May it please the court, Mr. Pearson. Sean Williams was sentenced to die. The case came before this court on direct appeal. You reversed that death sentence due to instructional error and severe prosecutorial misconduct, prosecutorial argument that you said was dominated by misconduct, combined with instructional error. You said that it was plain error. You said that those errors were outcome determinative. Then there was ineffective assistance of counsel, abuse of discretion by the trial judge. You described substantial mitigating factors that were already in the case, and sent the case back to be resentenced for a new sentencing hearing. And we're here today to determine what law will apply at that new sentencing hearing, what the available sentences are. At the time of the crime, in this case, at the time Mr. Williams was arrested, at the time he was tried, at the time he was sentenced, there were three possible sentences he faced. Life with parole eligibility after 20 years, life with parole eligibility after 30 years, and death. Under the statute, as the state of Ohio would like to see it applied, there are four possible sentences that he faces. Life with parole eligibility after 25 years, that's the minimum, a greater minimum than the original. Life with parole eligibility after 30 years. Life without the possibility of parole, a greater life sentence than he ever faced before, or could have faced previously under this court's decisions, and death. Under the version of the law, as you explained it, interpreting the statutes as they existed at the time of the crime, on resentencing, Mr. Williams could face two sentences: life with parole eligibility after 20 full years, and parole eligibility after 30 full years. We've argued propositions of law based on the ex post facto clause of the federal constitution, the retroactivity clause of the Ohio constitution, Ohio statutes, case law. What nobody's focused on in the total of 8 briefs that have been filed for this court, what's implicit in a number of the briefs, but nobody's actually spent much time focusing on it, is those life sentences. The one life sentence in the new statute, in the new version of the statute, the minimum life sentence, is greater than the minimum life sentence that Mr. Williams was ever eligible to face before. The life without parole sentence, the maximum life sentence in the new statute, is greater than any life sentence he was ever eligible to face before. Those sentences, regardless of the death sentence, which is what we've all been focusing our primary attention on in the briefs, for understandable reasons. But those life sentences, because they are greater than any life sentences he could, then, well, life without parole is greater than any life sentence he could have faced before, and life with parole eligibility after 20 years is a greater minimum than he could have faced before. Those sentences, those sentencing possibilities, clearly violate the second prong of Calder and the ex post facto clause that says that nobody can face a sentence that has been increased, a possible sentence that is greater than the possible sentence faced before.
Counsel, a lot of people have, a lot of briefs have focused on those issues of comparing the sentences and that sort of thing. Give me your best argument as to why the statutory changes allowing the mitigation to be heard by a new jury on remand, why that simply doesn't remove the impediment of penix and allow us to send the case back, not to be tried and sentenced, or not to be sentenced under the new statute, but to be sentenced under the old statute, but with a new panel on mitigation. Give me your best argument as to why that doesn't apply.
Because the statute doesn't authorize that. I mean, the new statute, creating that procedure for impaneling a new jury and sending the case back for resentencing, also says, and when that case goes back before this newly impaneled jury, it must have these new sentencing possibilities. The legislature created a unified package here. And having created that unified package, what it did was it added in a set of sentencing possibilities that we maintain can't possibly be applied in this case. And in order to apply that statute consistently with the law, what you would have to do is say, okay, part one is that this case goes back for, and we impanel a new jury, we create a new jury, and then we accept 2/4, 1/2 of the sentencing options in the current statute. We accept the part of the current statute that says he can get death, and we accept the part of the current statute that says he can get life with parole eligibility after 30 years. We believe that the other two parts of the sentencing options, life without the possibility of parole and life without with parole eligibility after 25 years, clearly don't apply in this case. We'll write those parts out of the statute, and then we'll write into the statute life with parole eligibility after 30 years. You would not only have to sever pieces of the statute out, you would have to declare parts of the statute unconstitutional, and you would have to write a new piece of the statute to make that work. And that is far beyond the judicial authority of this court.
Well, we frequently face remand issues when statutes have changed, and we have simply stated that the old statute with the lesser penalty applies. We don't find anything unconstitutional or otherwise. We just simply say that because it has a lesser penalty, this is the one the person gets sentenced under, not the new one.
But the whole this is not a case where we've simply said remand after the law has changed. An SB2 case, or a pre-SB2 case, comes to this court after SB2. Okay? And you reverse and send the case back for resentencing under the old law. You are simply applying the law as you have always applied it. You're not finding a new statute to apply. You're not taking a piece of this, reworking it, and saying, well, this piece of it counts, that piece of it doesn't. You're saying, okay, there was error. We're sending it back because it was appropriate to do that under pre-Senate Bill 2 law. It goes back for resentencing. It gets resentenced under pre-Senate Bill 2 law. In this case, what you're trying to do, what the state is suggesting doing, and what I believe, if I understand your question correctly, is that what you're doing is parsing the new law and saying we can take this part of it for one piece of what we will do on remand, but another part of it we have to ignore, and then we have to do this old system instead, which has, in order to do that, among other things, in order to do that.
But we did that recently in the drunk driving case where we said that the parse about the revoking the license for life wouldn't apply, but some of the other time limits on the sentencing would. We parsed it out there.
Statutes can sometimes be severed. I understand that. It's possible to sever pieces of statutes out. What I'm suggesting in this case is that in order to sever it out, what you really need to do is rewrite the statute. And that's more than a matter of severance. That's a matter of saying this part of the statute doesn't apply, that part does, and when this part applies, we're going to create a new section that tells you how to do it and that says what the sentencing options are, and that's not in the statute. Now, you get to vote and I don't, and you certainly have the authority to say that I'm wrong, but that's how we have to view it. And I think that is what you have to do. The state's position primarily, the state of Ohio's position in this case has been essentially this is a procedural matter. This is a procedural change in the law. And of course, there are procedural changes written into this statutory adaption, but it is primarily substantive. It is changing specifically the punishments that are available. That is not procedure, that's substance. The state says, almost in passing, but it is certainly the focus of the Attorney General's amicus brief in this case, that in fact, these sentencing changes work to Mr. Williams' advantage. He is not disadvantaged at all by this statutory scheme. Because, gee, all those really onerous life sentences that are now available make it less likely that he will get death. Putting death back on the table, as the state, the prosecutor's office in the principal brief here, does concede, although it tosses that argument out, as the state does concede, works a disadvantage.
If we accept your version, what options does the judge have on remand?
Exactly the same options that he has had since Penix in 1987 on remand of any case that predates where the crime occurred before 1995, or before October 1996, when the new statute came into effect. He may sentence Mr. Williams to life with parole eligibility after 20 years, or life with parole eligibility after 30 years, plus whatever time he received, and he of course received the maximum consecutive sentence for the underlying offense of rape in this case.
But you don't have a mitigation hearing. We've reversed the mitigation hearing. We found
it does
error
not follow that you couldn't have a mitigation hearing.
With just the judge? We've
death is off the table.
Yes,
and
but
a set of procedures for that.
Excuse me. We reversed the whole mitigation hearing, so there's no mitigation on which the judge can base 20 or 30 to life. There needs to be a new mitigation hearing. So does the judge do the new mitigation hearing with a new panel, but he no longer can just give death? Is that your solution?
Yes, and in fact, courts have done it repeatedly since Penix. Cases have gone back, and they have gone back for resentencing with life sentence options, and courts have taken, in some cases, no doubt, have taken evidence and said, you know, we need to know more. In other cases, equally, I know they have not, and they've heard argument, they've not heard argument, but they have had whatever they're going to have. And the procedures to be followed under that circumstance, this court has actually addressed those kinds of things in a couple of cases that worked its way back up here. But the real point is that the procedures to be followed in those cases would be worked out by the trial court. And if there are objections to that sentence that as it comes out that Mr. Williams wished to make, or to the procedures, he could take an appeal to the Court of Appeal. In principle, I suppose, it could work its way back up here, and it would at that point be a discretionary matter whether or not you would take it on. But those are matters that we have always allowed the trial courts to work out.
But so you're saying that it goes back, the judge, since we have no mitigation hearing, we threw the whole mitigation hearing out, the judge can impanel a new jury to do the mitigation. The judge has to do it to a three-judge panel. The judge does it just to himself, mitigation hearing?
It is, if it goes back this way, I suppose it is possible to make an argument in light of Parker and Harwell. It's probably possible to make an argument that the case would go back as a capital case, which would require a three-judge panel for the, which might arguably require a three-judge panel for the sentencing, or the creation of a procedure for impaneling a jury that while there is no statute that specifically authorizes, there's none I'm aware of that would actually forbid it either, or it could simply be done by one judge. It's not clear that it would be a capital case when it goes back, but if it is, it could. Be analyzed, however that would be analyzed. And in any case, I mean, the judge takes the evidence and makes the decision, and I've got about, and that's how we do things. And I'm really running over my time. I want to save my last 47 seconds for rebuttal, if I might.
Thank you, Mr. Gamzo. Mr. Pearson.
Craig Pearson for the State of Ohio. May it please the court. When the defendant appellant, Sean Williams, raped and strangled to death his pregnant girlfriend back on December the 8th, 1995, there was no statute in place that would permit a capital defendant whose conviction had been affirmed but whose sentence had been reversed from getting a new mitigation hearing with a full jury. So we're clear on that. That wasn't due to any constitutional infirmity, of course, and it wasn't due to any statutory prohibition. Instead, it was due to this court's dissenting decision in Penix, which was purely a case of statutory construction, in which this court said that the capital scheme in the state of Ohio envisioned the same jury hearing both the guilt and the mitigation phases. And since there wasn't any specific statutory authority for having a new jury, that it couldn't be done. And that was the state of affairs on December 8, 1995, when the defendant committed his crimes. But the General Assembly then filled the gap. And I say the gap because this court has also ruled after Penix that if the capital defendant's case was heard by a three-judge panel, that panel could simply reconvene and hold a new mitigation hearing. And of course, if a conviction and a sentence were both overruled or vacated, the slate would be wiped clean, and there'd be new guilt phase and mitigation phase.
Well, it'd be a lot easier to pick the three judges than it would be 12 jurors, wouldn't it? I mean, it'd be unless one of the jurors has passed, it would be easy to bring those individuals back to do the mitigation phase.
Exactly.
But how can you can't bring back the same jury that tried the case in 1996.
Well, precisely. I mean, that was kind of the idea of Penix, I think the rationale behind Penix was that this court said, well, we envision the same jury doing both phases of the Ohio statute kind of envisions that. And so then, consequently, it has to be the same jury. And so, you know, that's impractical. You can't impanel a new jury because there's no statute.
Are you conceding that 29-2906 that allows for a new jury or the same panel or a different panel doesn't apply, that it, because it doesn't say it's retroactive?
No, I'm just trying to pretty much lay the groundwork, and I think I've probably taken too much time doing that, but.
Well, let's hear you discuss the statute that was enacted in 1998 on resentencing.
Right.
That's really what we're here.
There are essentially two questions that were presented in this case involving the new statute. The first was the procedure of impaneling a new jury and having a full-blown mitigation hearing. And the second issue raised by the appellant was the sentence, or what the sentencing options would be at that new mitigation hearing. In my opinion, only the procedural question is properly before the court at this time. In appellant's motion for reconsideration or clarification, there wasn't a single word mentioned or argument raised, or even an allusion to there being any problem with the sentences. When the state responded and opposed the motion for reconsideration and clarification, we also didn't address that matter either. And then when this court decided to hear this matter, and I want to read directly from the order, the copy of the order that I received from this court, said it is ordered by the court that the motion be granted to the extent that the parties are to brief the following issue. Following remand in a new penalty hearing, may a sentence of death be imposed upon the appellant under the current version of RC 2929.06, or does the version of RC 2929.06 in effect at the time of the offense, which would preclude a death sentence, apply upon remand of this case? And that was it. So,
what's your answer? What is your answer to that question, to that issue?
The General Assembly did not make this statute expressly retroactive, did it?
Yes, I believe they did.
What language in the statute says it's retroactive?
The language in the statute specifically says, and if I can find it here. Ah, yes. Here we go. It says in subsection B, which is the only subsection really under consideration here, if the sentence of death that is imposed upon an offender is vacated upon appeal because of error that occurred in the sentencing phase of the trial, and if Division A of this section does not apply, that's the important part, I think, when it says if Division A of this section does not apply.
That's retroactivity language?
Yeah, because you go back to A.
I thought retroactivity language had to be expressed. I thought General Assembly had to tell us, the courts, that this statute will be applied retroactively, or some language similar to that, not just by sort of implication.
Oh, I'm not aware there has to be any kind of neon sign, you know, put up that says this is going to be applied retroactively.
I'd settle for just words in the statute rather than neon sign would be sufficient.
I do have words in the statute. In subsection A, it says, it starts out this entire statute by saying, if the sentence of death that is imposed upon an offender is vacated upon appeal because the Court of Appeals, in a case in which a sentence of death was imposed for an offense committed before January 1, 1995.
Okay.
Or the Supreme Court in cases in which the Supreme Court reviews the death sentence and then blah, blah, blah. It goes on and it talks about things that really aren't relevant to this case. But the point is, in subsection B, it explicitly says if subsection A of this section does not apply, but subsection A specifically, with that specific language, it says, in a case in which a sentence of death was imposed for an offense committed before January 1, 1995, or the Supreme Court, in cases where it hears the appeal, which cover both January 1, 1995 and post, it's covering, the statute clearly covers all cases. So that is my express language that's in the statute. In subsection B, the legislature simply took a shortcut and didn't reiterate again. It simply said if Division A of this section does not apply. It didn't go through and say, and if Division A of this section does not apply, which is a case in which, and then it could have reiterated subsection A, but it didn't do that. I mean, it seems like a little waste of time, and it seemed like it would be a convoluted way to write a statute.
If we accept your version, then your argument is that it can be sent back for a new panel of jurors on mitigation, correct?
Correct.
What is then, which statute then applies for the options, the three-part options or the four-part options, the new statute?
Okay. Well, I'll address the question, but I still want to go back to emphasizing that I don't think that question is properly before the court. This court didn't order that question to be addressed. It didn't come up until appellant's briefs, mostly in their the briefs of the amici.
But we sort of need to address it to know what version to apply when it goes back, regardless of whether it was raised or not. It seems to be inherent in the issue.
Well, no, I think that unlike this court ordered the remand in this case pursuant to 2929.06. And in its order for this reconsideration or clarification or whatever we want to talk about what we're doing here, it essentially said, can there be a new jury impaneled in a full-blown mitigation hearing?
No.
That's the question. Because under Penix it can't be, and death is off the table. In this case, if it can be, if this statute applies, death is still on the table. But regardless of whether you take the sentence of death that existed at the time of the offense, or I mean the offenses, the options that were available at the time of the offense, or these four, death is still there.
Okay, but let's assume arguendo, the jury says they're not going to go for death this time. What does the judge instruct them? You have two more options, or you have three more options?
Well, it's the state's position that it should be the four options of death. And again, I don't really think it's necessary to for like this court to decide that issue in this matter, because say Sean Penix is sent back down, and you say, all right, it's fine, go ahead, have a new jury impaneled and a new mitigation hearing, and he's given death again, and he appeals for a lot of reasons, errors that occurred in the mitigation phase and so forth. Or simply to argue before this court that the aggravating circumstances didn't outweigh the mitigating factors beyond a reasonable doubt. There's going to be another appeal without question.
But what if the jury comes back life without parole? Do we get an appeal that says that is a greater option and therefore unconstitutional than he had before? Or do we argue, you argue, that's a lesser option because he could have gotten death?
We would probably argue that it would be a lesser option because he could have gotten death. But whatever we argue, we would argue at that time, after going back to the trial court and putting this in front of the trial court and letting the trial court decide which of these sentence options to give.
And can't we for? I mean,
sure, you can shortcut it.
Shortcut that. I mean, we're going to get that argument no matter if they don't come back with death. We're going to get that argument.
Yeah,
it seems to me inherent in the solution that we have to tell them if we accept your version, you get four, you got three, but then we got to look at the enhanced penalty issue. That's inherent in the argument. They don't have the 20 without life available anymore under yours, and that certainly is an enhancement.
Well, conceivably, but.
But conceivably, how conceivably? What? It's 25 versus 20. How is it conceivable? It's
well,
actual.
It 25 is greater than 20. There's no question about that. I've kind of figured that one out. But the statute has to be viewed as a whole. You can't take part of it and say, well, this is detrimental. One little part might be detrimental. Therefore, we're going to throw out the whole sentence. You have to either accept it or reject the whole thing.
Well, we just did that in a case where we took part of it and said, this part applies and this part doesn't because it's greater.
The sentence?
Yes, on the driver's license suspension.
Okay, well, I'm not familiar with that case, but When the U.S. Supreme Court has reviewed these cases, in Miller versus Florida, for example, they were looking at changes in the good time credit. No. Weaver versus Graham. They were looking at the changes in the good time credit. Okay. State of Florida had come along and taken away, made it more difficult to get good time credit in certain respects, but they made it other options and other ways in which an inmate could get good time credit. The court in that case. Specifically said, all right, fine, this one portion here is detrimental, but that doesn't end our inquiry because we got to look at the statute as a whole. And we got to weigh and see if it's, is it more beneficial, is it more lenient, or does it impose a greater penalty? Now, in that particular case, they said that the changes that Florida made in the overall structure was more detrimental than beneficial. But it's a weighing process. And in this case, the life without the without parole actually benefits the defense. I mean, it takes death off the table. I mean, it doesn't take death off the table, but it encourages a jury to not give death. In fact, in Raglan, before this court, State versus Raglan, the defense came before this court and argued, well, they should have been allowed to have that as an option. The court rejected that only because it said that SB 2 applies only after January 1, 1995, and prior to that, you have to apply the new statute. Now, but defense counsels have argued that. In fact, in one of the cases, the Odom case, that was cited by the appellant and as a supplemental authority, in that very case, that argument was made and rejected by the Supreme Court of Tennessee about 6 weeks ago. These are always being made. I can foresee, for example, if this court were to find that the original sentence had to be applied, there's still going to be an argument in the trial court that's going to say, but the defense is going to argue we still should get the life without the possibility of parole because it's more lenient. And they're going to cite RC 1.58 for that. And they're going to argue that it's more lenient, so they should get it. And unfortunately, they might be right because the statutes that impose this new structure, SB 258 and several acts that came later, didn't have the provisions that SB 2 had in it that said, as we explicitly said, this applies to only cases before January 1, 1995. And the new law applies to these other cases. I mean, they didn't do that. So this court's decision in Ragland doesn't necessarily apply. I can very easily see the defense arguing, after arguing that it's harsher here, going back and arguing in front of the trial court, but we ought to be allowed to have that as an option, which would be anomalous, which is another reason why I don't think the court needs to address the sentencing matter.
You've used your time, Mr. Pearson.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you. Mr. Gamso, you've saved almost 50 seconds of your time.
Let me very quickly respond to a couple of things Mr. Pearson just said. Subsection B, the issue of the section of 292906 that's at issue here. Subsection A, in fact, does address cases before 1995. Subsection B says, the section at issue here today, subsection B says this is about those cases that are not addressed in subsection A. Take the retroactive part, we're not talking about that. Subsection B specifically addresses other things. That is, if that's a direct, clear statement of retroactivity, I'm stunned. Mr. Pearson said, and I quote, I wrote this down, the statute has to be viewed as a whole. That's my point. You can't parse it. If you try and parse it, and you can't separate it out, you can't just say we're only dealing with the death question here, because when you decide which statute applies, you've got, and which version of the statute applies, you've got to figure out how to do it. And the only way to make the death part of the statute apply is to rewrite the whole statute. Mr. Pearson implicitly acknowledges that when he says the statute has to be viewed as a whole. I am out of time. We'd ask you to say that death is off the table. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Cam. So the case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.